Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's a weird day.
It's Sunday evening.
Thanks to everybody out there who, we actually had several people who were like, is there something wrong with the Six Color Secret podcast? And I was like, sometimes we skip a week. And then I looked, I was like, or 2 weeks.
Yeah. Is this thing on? Is anybody listening?
You know, there's been kind of a lot going on is the answer. Although this, I think, is going to prompt me to finally schedule with Dan an official recording time, which I know is it's really kind of corporate, man. We were all about like the, I remember when you were about laundry in the background, and now you're scheduling when you record your podcast. But more often than not, I get a note from Dan on Friday morning. Was it going like, so are we going to do this? Or it's like, oh yeah, right. That podcast that are supposed to do.
Yeah. It's a little loosey goosey, but you know, people, the listeners have demanded it.
Yeah, so we're here, and I was thinking we'd do it early next week, but I'm actually traveling for the next 3 days, and when I get back on Wednesday, I immediately have to do two podcasts. So here we are. Do you get new Apple stuff?
No, it's all right. So I'm in a weird situation with this because I did order both a XS and a Apple Watch Series 4. I have no idea when these will arrive, and I'll tell you why. Because when I ordered them, so I ordered them about 45 minutes after they went on sale, because I didn't set an alarm. I was on vacation, and I figured, you know, I hadn't been sleeping great on vacation. I kept waking up a lot, so I figured, oh, if I wake up and it happens to be like around the time, I'll just put in an order. And I happened to wake up about 3:45, so I put an order in, fine. I noticed there was a little delayed, and I was like, all right, that's no big deal. I don't need it day one. And so when I got my email, my order confirmation from Apple, the first one said that the phone would arrive in a window between the 28th, I think, and the September 28th and October 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, a week late. Fine, no big deal. And the watch was October 12th through October 19th. I was like, that's pretty late. Okay, I guess that one was really popular. Then I got like an email last week saying that my phone would be delivered on Monday and or maybe Tuesday. I don't remember. Anyway, there's been a lot of disagreement between the UPS site, between Apple's internal site, and UPS has now had, for both of my watch and my phone, notices that they've been like stuck in customs at one point. And I don't know if this is part and parcel. There were some UPS problems, I heard, like, and in general, like, logistically, it seemed like Apple had some tough problems this time around that they don't usually have, possibly because of new systems put in place. But there were a couple stories on some of the Mac blogs saying that stuff that was supposed to arrive on Friday at some point was starting to like seem like it was slipping. And then, you know, people would email UPS and UPS were like, no, it's definitely going to show up on Friday. And then I know they had their order system was down over the weekend, I think, at a couple points. So currently, like, if I go on to UPS, like, it just doesn't give me ship dates. So Apple sent me email saying, your order has shipped. And it told me my phone would arrive Monday or Tuesday, and then my watch would arrive on Thursday of this week, which is way ahead of that delivery window they gave me. But I honestly can't tell from the UPS site. So I have a whole bunch of different conflicting information. Someday this week I will get home, or somebody, the UPS driver, will show up and knock on my door and these things will be delivered, presumably, but I don't know when.
Yeah, Lauren's Apple Watch is October 12th to 19th.
Yes, that was the same as mine.
And so I didn't get to my local Apple store this weekend, although it didn't look like they had any, and then I'm going to be out. I may duck out, depending on my timing tomorrow, I may actually duck out when I get to Chicago and just walk over to the Apple store that's like a mile from the hotel and see if they've got any, because that's what I keep saying to myself is I can cancel this order if I can find one in a store, but I've not yet tried that.
Well, yeah. And for me, it's like, I literally got the, your shipment is on the way email. So it's like, at this point, it's too late to
Well, they often do
it.
That. Right. And I haven't gotten that yet. So I still am in the window there where I could cancel it and say, no, I found one in the store and that's fine.
Because Apple claims it will arrive on Tuesday. UPS has no knowledge of when it will arrive. So, you know.
Because Apple reserves some for retail. That's just the bottom line.
Right.
I think we may have talked about that before, but it's, You would think that if you're ordering on the night of, like, you should be in a line to get the first ones off the assembly line. But what Apple doesn't want is for the Apple stores to not have them in stock when people are curious. And so the trick is, you could go in, and if they've got it, you can get it. So
a lot of time they're shipping those first shipping windows, and I've had this happen in the past too. Those first shipping windows that are like way out in advance, those are really like worst case scenario shippings. Like, I've definitely had them quote me ships that were like a week or two off and then deliver it. I think last year I had one that was like, oh yeah, you'll get it a week after it launches. And I ended up getting it on launch day. Like, I think they just play very conservative with those initial like ship windows, because they want to under promise and over deliver rather than the opposite. But yeah, they definitely seem to have something weird. Like, I've gotten this, so I'm looking at my UPS tracking page, and it literally has this, like, for my watch, it's like, your package is being processed through customs, which is a thing I've never seen before on a UPS tracking page. So part of me also wonders, given, I mean, I guess this probably would have been more broadly, but like, given the whole political climate and the situation between China and the US trade wise, whether there was some impact there in terms of just, there's more red tape than usual.
Right. Yeah. It's a funny game we play here. So I do have, by the way, I do have Apple Watch Series 4 and iPhone XS and XS Plus or XS Max, because Plus I got Max. I went to Cupertino on a Thursday afternoon and got review units and got my briefings and talked to the people there and got to walk back up to the Steve Jobs Theater where they've got the secret briefing room center thing, which is, I guess that's where the briefings are now. Used to be an R&D3 at Infinite Loop. I guess they're in the Steve Jobs Theater now, which is a weird place for them. But there is ample parking beneath the Apple Visitor Center there.
Right.
And so,
they can kind of keep it all cordoned off, right? Like, so it's not like you don't even have to go to the headquarters. Yeah. You go to the special.
You go to the place that's nowhere near anything. It's special in the sense that nobody is allowed to go to the other place. And as you know, of course, my briefing was in the afternoon, and I was in traffic for more than 2.5 hours getting home after that. That was really great. But you got to do what you got to do to get the stuff, because, you know, I'm not going to buy XS Max and a XS, right? And so this gets them in my hands immediately so that I can try them out. So I'm trying them out. I'll travel with them. Because those first embargo stories, you know, the first embargo reviews come out, like, my impetus to review everything immediately is dramatically decreased, right? Because, you know, they all had a week with the product, and I've only had a couple of days. So what's the point in following up a whole bunch of week-long considered reviews with a review that's bashed out in a couple of days? Doesn't really make sense. So I'm gonna kind of take the long view and write some things that are maybe like a little more experiential and a little less review like because that's kind of what I'm left with. Is I'm not quite sure what else to say. Like, John Gruber wrote some really good reviews, for example, and like, I'm not gonna just try to do what he already did, because what's the point of that? So I'm gonna try to put my own spin on it.
I think it's especially tough this year with the XS in particular, because it feels very incremental in the upgrade. And I know, I mean, the camera seems to be the thing that most reviews seize upon, but that is pretty much it, right?
That's it. I mean, the screen's supposed to be better HDR-wise, but like, really, I think the reason that you would buy this over, you know, to upgrade from a 10 is the camera. Of course, most people don't upgrade from the previous year's model. They upgrade from 2, 3, 4 years back.
Right. Well, and this is clearly not positioned that way to me. And like, you know, as somebody who bought a XS anyways, I mean, and for me, it was ended up being a matter of math for me, because essentially on the upgrade program, there was very little downside to swapping out my phone.
Sure.
Like, that's paying it off and selling it, like, sure, I could do that if I wanted to spend some more time, like, if I wanted to pay off another year worth of payments on this, but I could essentially keep paying the same amount and get a new phone. So it struck me as kind of a no-brainer at that point. It's like, well, I might as well get the improvements if I'm just going to keep paying sort of the monthly installment plan.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I really like the Series 4 as I thought I would. It feels thinner, and the big screen is beautiful, and complications have to be written specifically for the infograph faces, so there aren't a lot out there right now. So I'm imploring all Apple Watch app developers to get with the program, because right now my infograph faces are super sparse and I want to see more stuff.
Was your unit a 44 millimeter or a 40?
It's a 44.
Okay. Now, how do you feel? I know some people have expressed concern that it's actually too large compared to even the 42.
I'm not a skinny wristed, like Casey Liss. The 44 is fine with me. It's fine. It doesn't, I had a 42 before. This does not feel any, you know, it feels smaller in a sense. The screen feels big, but that's as much about the edge to edge than it is about being a couple millimeters taller and wider. And overall, the thing feels thinner and less obtrusive. So it's a nice kind of combination. So could I use the 40? Probably. When I get Lauren's, right, I'm going to try it on and see how that feels. But the 44 feels fine. So I think it is, you know, and I have bands that I don't want to give up. So I'm going to err on the side of getting the 44 because those are where my watch bands live.
Yeah. I mean, I ordered a 44 as well, and I've had a 42 since launch. So I was trying to decide the sort of like what to do with the old watch. And like, you know, my fiance was like, oh, I've been interested in trying it, but she doesn't want the 40 because it is too large for her, the 42.
Oh, yeah.
The old 42 is too large for her. And she was like, well, maybe interested in the 38 or the new one, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah. The new one. That's the thing is, I feel like for people who like the smaller watch, that's going to be the nice thing about it is that the 40 is going to, with a bigger screen, is going to be way better in terms
of
what fits on there than
the screen on that is bigger than the 42, right? Like the 40,
yes.
The 40 millimeter is bigger than the old, as John put it, the small new watch is bigger than the big old watch.
Yeah. Yeah, for those purposes, yeah. So I actually think this is a big win for people who are used to having the small watch. It will be a little bit bigger, but it'll also be, you know, that is screen space that you're getting. You're getting a lot more screen space, and I think that's a win for them.
Well, it is a big win, and we've talked about this a lot in the past, but that the major selling point of the watch is glanceable information, and Apple really seems to have taken that to heart with the infograph stuff.
Totally.
Yeah, you want information at a glance?
You got it.
We'll give you information at a glance.
yeah, but I think that's good. And you don't have to use those, is the thing. I'm a little frustrated by the fact that the old watch faces don't inherit some of the new complication styles. Like, there's those circles on the infograph faces. Those are not the same things as the corners of the old faces. The corners of the old faces have a different complication style. It's a little bit frustrating. I hope they get more aligned over time where they're crossing across, because there are things I don't love about the infograph face, but I love all the stuff you can put on it. That said, it is like a lot of the stuff that Apple has ginned up for release are things like UV and pollution index and stuff like that I don't want, right? So, which is why I put out my plea to app developers. I want to fill that up with cool stuff, but I want it to be cool stuff from apps that I've got on my phone that I can put on my Apple Watch. I don't want it because a lot of Apple stuff does not interest me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of some of those things, but yeah, it would be cool. I mean, I'm still pretty limited in third-party complications I use. I use Carrot Weather because I think they have one of the better weather complications.
It's so good on watchOS 5, and it's so good on the Series 4. That is my go-to, like, that's how you do it. They did a great job of implementing it. They've got all the little, like, the range complications. Mm-hmm. I found a bug, and I actually emailed them about it, and they said, yeah, it's good now that we've got one. We can fix our bugs because they didn't have... they built all these complications right out of the gate without having actually used the phone, right? So those will get better over time.
So that one, and the only ones I use are that and the pedometer +++,
which is good. Like. Which David Smith has also done those. Those are two winners. Those are already there. I use Overcast, so that's one of the ones I'm frustrated by. And Marco just said he couldn't get to it, and I expect that he's going to have a. I may see a beta of it next week, even, but I expect that he's going to have an update that supports the new watches soon. Now that he's got one. But it's just like immediately I'm like, oh, but I want all of my Apple Watch buddies to be on the new faces. And the new faces, you've got to have a new complication or you just don't show up there, which is kind of dumb. But that's how Apple chose to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that it required sort of more specific design But yeah, it also seemed like you could have sort of grandfathered in old ones and it just wouldn't look as good. But that's nothing about that surprises me.
No,
that decision
no.
is patently Apple.
No, fair. Anyway, it's I'm really enjoying that. And then the 10S is fun to try. I think the 10S Max is really good. Like, I think people who use the Plus phones are going to really love the idea of a plus-sized 10-style phone, because it really literally just is, what if we made a bigger one of the same phone? Like, the same design, the same look, the same screen, all of that is exactly the same. It's just bigger. And I think because the bezels go away, it doesn't feel as huge. It is as huge, but it doesn't feel as huge somehow, just psychologically.
Yeah, I never made it to the Plus
Club. No.
And it seems too large to me.
No, it's very large. If I was using it, I said this to Mike on this week's upgrade, which, depending on when you listen to this, might not be out yet, but we recorded it earlier today, and I said, I could see scenarios where I would like the Max. If I was really intensively using my phone a lot, and it was the only device I had in those scenarios, I could totally use one. But in the scenarios I use, it's like, no, I like that it's not that big. I don't need it to be big. And it is much bigger, and you gain some screen space from that. But, like, do you really gain enough screen space to give up that, to make it uncomfortable in your hand? I don't think so. But and your mileage may vary.
And you know, we haven't really talked much about I don't think I've done an episode since the Apple event.
We're busy people.
Yeah, we're busy people. It happens. But the 10R, that's what makes the 10R such a wild card, right? Like, bigger than the 10S, but it's cheaper. And I know you and Mike talked about, I listened to a little bit of you and Mike talking about this, but it's, you know, it's a weird situation, because, so, you know, my fiance is replacing, she's got an iPhone 6, and she's getting to the point, like, we're even with iOS 12, you know, I think that probably helped matters a little bit, the performance improvements, but an iPhone 6 is still, you know, end of the day, a 4-year-old phone. There's only so much you can do. And, you know, looking at options for her in terms of where to go, you know, from there, I think it's actually a tricky upgrade path, because I don't think that she necessarily wants to go out and buy a 10S. I think that might be just too expensive a proposition. And yet, dropping to a cheaper price for a larger phone, I think, might be a non-starter as well. And so, you know, at that point, it's like, well, you know, maybe she's getting an 8, right? You know, and the 8's a fine phone. If she's coming from a 6, it'll be a nice hardware bump with a pretty similar feel to it. And that's fine. But, like, you know, it still feels weird to be like, well, okay, yeah, the best phone for you might be a year old phone at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Apple fully believes that a certain number of people are going to buy the iPhone 8. And I think
that's why they have a range. That's why they have a whole, like, price, you know, all those price points, right? They've spent years at this point going from having one phone to a range of phones at a variety of price points.
That's the whole point.
Carefully designed.
And the iPhone 8 being there and being a pretty good price, yeah, that's a pretty good phone. It was a pretty good phone last year.
Sure.
It still is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So it's, I think, you know, and I'm kind of curious. We'll see if her six holds out long enough that we can at least, you know, when the 10R rolls around, go in and take a look at it. Because I think that is one of the wild cards. It's like, it's not quite like any of the other phones. So it seems like one of those things you might actually need to sort of get your hands on to get an idea of, is this a size that works for me?
Hmm.
But, and I'm intrigued to see it, because not having been at the Apple event, it is a product that is unlike any of the other things on the, you know, in any of Apple's other phones.
For sure. I'm trying to see what else is going on here.
We had the iOS 12 this week.
Yeah.
And shortcuts.
Shortcuts.
Yeah, you helped me with some shortcut stuff that I was playing around with.
Yeah, I was sitting on the couch trying to answer your questions, and you found a different solution than I did. But there are ways of doing, there's a lot of, you know, you got to get into it, and you got to start thinking like shortcuts things. But once you do, it starts to make some sort of sense.
It is a fascinating thing to me. Like, shortcuts to me, I've been struck by, it has this slightly paradoxical duality to it, where it's both incredibly impressive how powerful it is, like the things that it can do, mm-hmm. and yet as soon as you start digging into it, all you want is more flexibility, right? Like for me, as soon as I start playing around with it, it's like, oh, but I need to be able to like pass in more information. I need to be able to like tell Siri more arbitrary things, right? Rather than just a shortcut phrase to do this one thing. I start feeling like, oh, there would be so much more I could do if I had this more complexity. But it's not to take away from the fact that all the stuff it does do is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's the, I feel like the next stage for shortcuts next year is going to be accepting input and acting on it. Right now, your input is basically which shortcut you choose to launch. So like Overcast can't take an input, or you can't write a workflow that takes an input. Well, and you say like, hey, lady, Overcast, play blank. Like, you can't do that.
You can't say play the latest episode of, you know,
blank,
the Six Color Secret
and then
podcast.
Take the blank and put it in and pass it to Overcast and say play that. Doesn't work like that. You can go into Overcast and go down to that podcast and record a shortcut there, and that works. But you have to do one for every single podcast, right? That's gonna change.
It's literally like a keyboard shortcut.
Like
right?
shortcuts, like shortcuts. Yeah. Right now, it is. It's the what do you do for keyboard shortcuts on a touchscreen? I think shortcuts. This year, the app, the whole idea was, let's get it in there, right?
Yeah, sure.
Next year might be, how do we refine this and how do we have this? Because there's a bunch of rough edges and shortcuts. Like, I was trying to build a shortcut that takes an article I'm writing and I put in a predefined format, like measurements that are in imperial or metric units, and then I run a shortcut and it converts them all into showing both the imperial and metric in parentheses. Using pcalc as the converter, although you could just do it with math functions too if you want to do it that way. I was trying to explore like what how do we use pcalc's conversion stuff, and that's great, but like what I need to do is have that repeat for a bunch of different it needs to look for millimeters and then do the thing with inches, and then it needs to look for kilograms and do the thing with pounds. And like shortcuts, you can't like copy and paste blocks and duplicate them.
Right.
You have to just keep redoing them, and it's infuriating. And that's one of those things that, like, why? So what I ended up doing was making new shortcuts that were called from the original, because you can duplicate a shortcut. So I'd make more shortcuts and more shortcuts. The problem with that is then you can't share them, because you're like, oh, I have this solution that is 8 shortcuts.
4 shortcuts, yeah.
And that's not so good. So they got a lot to do, but it's very clear to me that this year was about integrating them with iOS and just having them work. And the fact is, they put Dropbox support back. It supports SSH. It supports JavaScript. Right. All of these things that you'd be like, oh, Apple's surely not going to support that. And they're all in there. They're all in there. It's amazing. So like it's really good as it is, but it has plenty of room to get better.
Yeah. And there's stuff looking in there. Like I've had some issues with some of it. Like I still can't get, you know, Apple updated all the iWork apps to have shortcuts capability, and I still can't get it to show up. Like for some reason, I talked to people on Twitter who are having similar problems about having some of those surface in the settings app. It's like, yeah, numbers. Like, and it's like, oh yeah, it's just not showing up. Still not showing up for me. I have no idea why.
Yeah,
like,
it just feels a little rough. So frustrating. And then why are those things? There are a lot of things that commit to the little list. They're donating those actions to the list, but they aren't directly addressable in shortcuts. The only way, like a HomeKit is like that too, where if you want to do a HomeKit in a shortcut, what you need to do is go to the Home app and turn the thing off or on, and then go at it while it's temporarily in that kind of history of things you've done. You can't go to HomeKit and search and pick a thing. Yeah. Like, oh, no, we can't do that. That's too complicated.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, I can't get input necessarily from it. Like, I was thinking, oh, I have a temperature sensor in my office. Oh, could I do a thing where I can run a shortcut and it tells me, is it warmer inside or outside? No, it's not possible. Like, there's no way to get the input from home. And there's no way to, I could not find a weather function that was just give me the temperature in like a number.
No, you have, and it's like, you have to do through a web service or something, and they're out there. Right. I mean, there's a bunch of things that use web services or something like that.
But again, it just shows you every little bit I dig into it makes me feel like, oh, this would be awesome if it just like went a little further, right? Like,
not there yet.
I think it's coming. Yeah, I agree. I think I'm hoping that shortcuts improves popular enough, because I think it's popular amongst people that we know, but I'm not sure how applicable, especially because Shortcuts itself is an app that I presume you need to, if you have not,
you have to download it from the App Store
workflow. Yeah, you got to go find it, yep. Right? And so you need somebody to tell you probably like, oh, hey, you should try this app Shortcuts. And like in the same way that Automator never really took off on the Mac, you know, and that was included in every version mm-hmm. of Mac OS. You know, I wonder about the adoption of it more broadly, but it seems like, you know, at least the team of people working on it is passionate about it.
And, it's, and I think that goes a long way. It's not going to get adopted by a huge set of iOS users. Yeah. I think it will, because it's official Apple, it will be adopted by more people than adopted the third-party app. But in the end, I think Shortcuts for most people are going to be, can I record a thing in this app tell that app to do something? And then if you want to explore, like, can I chain three things together, then great. Shortcuts app will let you do that. But that's going to be for a fraction of a percent of people.
Yeah.
And that's fine, because that's your pro use case. And people will still discover it.
Yeah, and let's not forget, of course, that Siri is also very capable of a lot of the things that right now Shortcuts can't do, right? Like, you know, if you wanted to make a shortcut for whatever reason that was set an alarm for an arbitrary time, obviously you can't do that. But Siri already handles that. So, like, that bodes well in some ways, too, because Siri's natural language processing means it can understand and parse a sentence that was, like, set an alarm for this time. And so it's feasible. You just need to find a way to expose that back to Shortcuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll happen. Yeah. I think there'll be a way to do it. And that'll all get better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, first things first, this is, as Federico said this week, the best case scenario. It's the best timeline for this stuff. This is, they kept all that stuff, even the Dropbox stuff, which was a really annoying thing in the beta where you couldn't save or read from save to or read from Dropbox. And it's like, nope, it's back in there.
Yeah, I used that in the one I made, which I was getting your help with, was essentially like taking a picture of a receipt when I do expenses and then parsing it, like making a scan and then creating like a file name and saving it to Dropbox. And it was remarkably possible. It's not quite as elegant or streamlined as it could be, but it's surprisingly how well it works. Like, it took me a while to troubleshoot and get everything working the way I wanted it to. But and it's not something that's even like that shareable, again, because it's really based on my own bookkeeping system. But it works great for what it is, and it saves me a couple steps, because I used to have to do this like whole dance to get everything working correctly. And I did find a feature in there that I was really delighted, which is normally I take a scan with Dropbox and it saves as a PDF. And that's fine. But I noticed that if you take a picture as a JPEG and save it out to Dropbox, you can retroactively go into Dropbox and tell it this is a scan, and then do the little, like, it'll like change, you know, flatten and use black and white, like sort of the scan style thing. And you can do that after the fact. And I was like, oh, that actually makes my life way easier, because it's not just now a PDF that's essentially a photo. It's a photo that I can turn into a scan. So I'm very excited that that's my biggest problem with all these automation tools, is always like, do I have a task that I need to automate?
You can't just say,
automate.
I think I will use Automator today.
I will
do a shortcut. It doesn't, you know, you got to have something. Like the one that I have been using a lot lately is, I always get frustrated because I want to share a picture in Slack from my phone. And Slack doesn't make any attempt to reduce the file size at all. So you end uploading an enormous file.
Giant picture, yeah.
And I have a shortcut. It's actually on Shortcuts. If you go to shortcuts.app, which is a web address, believe it or not.
That was a thing.
It is a place where you can download other people's shortcuts. And I have one on there called Resize Image to Clipboard. And what it does is you share an image from your photo library, and you run this shortcut. And what it does is it resizes the image and saves it out as a much smaller JPEG and puts it on the clipboard. And then you paste it into Slack. And I use that now to share images on Slack, because Slack does not want to give me the option to reduce that 10 megabyte image down to something more reasonable. And so I use that all the time now. It's great.
I literally just installed it as we were talking about it.
Yeah, it's
thanks, Shortcuts.
It's that's great. Helpful. That is a good one.
I also
one.
Have no idea what the icon you've chosen is, but it's delightful.
It's the dancing stick man.
That's great.
It's great.
That's great. It makes me happy.
I'm glad that came through. I wasn't sure. I'm not sure exactly what all gets shared there. And then I have the as I detailed on the site at some point, like I built a shortcut for uploading all my graphs from the Apple Financials. And that was a good example of, like, I need something that does this, and it totally does it. But one of the things that it does that's super clever, and Casey Liss was talking about this because he actually did this weekend, is he has a thing that he has to do that involves SSHing to a server and entering a command. And on his iPhone, he would use to, like, bring up a terminal and tap to connect, and then type the command and then disconnect. It's like, that's a shortcut. Because there's a connect to a server via SSH shortcut where you put in your username and your password, and then it's literally like, what command would you like to issue? And if you use the cat command, somebody told me when I was working on this thing, you can literally pass it a file and have the command be cat followed by the file name that you want to write the file to, and it just uploads the file. It's amazing. But for Casey, it's perfect, right? Because he needs to go to a server and say, do this. And you can wrap that in a shortcut and put it on an icon on your iPhone, and you're done. And it does the whole thing.
I thought about that because I don't think this has been as much of an issue for me lately, but I would run the VPN service in macOS server on my Mini, and every once in a while it would just die, and I would have to go on and, like, kick it. Like, you know, via terminal, you could kind of kill the service and restart it. And I was like, oh, I could do that as a shortcut now. Like, that would be way easier than doing the whole dance. Yeah. So, like, again, that's what I'm saying. Like, with the integrations with SSHL scripts and JavaScript, like you said, like, it's, and Federico had a whole post about integrating it with IFTTT, which is possible but kind of cumbersome, but it's doable. And it's like, you know, you link in those services and you have access to a huge swath of stuff, right? And it's just like, it goes really broad. It's not super deep right now, but it's really broad, which is pretty amazing. Well, and like, the fact that any of this exists on iOS now is kind of nuts, like, after all these years.
Mike Hurley talks about how you can do toggle and there's another one that I've just blanked on, but these are services that like toggle is a time tracker. It has a web API, and you can hit the web API. So it doesn't even need to have an app. I think it does have an app, but you stuff that doesn't even need an app. If you can ping, or if this, then that is another example. If you can ping something somewhere and say, boop, this just happened on the web, like, the shortcut can do that. And if it gives you back data, the shortcut can parse that data and then do something else with it. And then you throw in, I did my first X callback to your URL, which is super nerdy, but I wanted to see, so I built this shortcut that was the converter for all the, like, metric and imperials to create, so my story would have both. And I realized what I really want to do is launch that from OneWriter, which is the app I use to write most of my stuff on the iPad. Mm-hmm. Well, OneWriter has a macro language in JavaScript, but it also has, instead of a macro, you can just have it be, this command is a URL. And so the URL is workflow:\runworkflow\name=, and the name of the workflow. Basically, there's a format that the workflow had that shortcuts also honors, that is a URL that is basically just open that app and tell it to run a shortcut. It totally works. And because it does X callback URL, you can pass it information, and you can even ask, and this is where it actually breaks down, because these programs don't return what shortcuts doesn't return what OneWriter expects. But the idea is, with X callback URL, you can do things like, when this succeeds, send this back to me in this format. And that totally works. What I have it do is, I that didn't work, so I had to do it where it, at the end of my shortcut, it appends the result to a OneWriter URL that says, replace the selection with this text that I've just modified, and then open URL. So OneWriter, I press the button, it opens a URL that launches a shortcut, which runs the shortcut based on the contents of the text of the document I'm working on, processes it, runs through all of that, and at the end, sticks the result in a URL that's for OneWriter and opens it, which opens back in OneWriter and replaces my text with the new text. Totally works. It's amazing. It's bizarre that it that's what it takes. But, you know, it's computers. That's what it takes.
Yeah. No, and this is why I'm excited about, like, some of the flexibility coming in the future. Like, I tried to create a shortcut to do, so I'd send an email every week to our Clockwise guests with the link to the spreadsheet
right.
where they can put in their Clockwise topics. And it's like, can I make a workflow that at least simplifies some of this? And the answer is, it's actually really hard, because what I need it to do is, like, essentially I need to launch it from, like, Google spreadsheets with the link as the thing that's getting, like, shared in, and then I probably still need to manually enter the email addresses, because there's no way for it to, like, look up who are the guests this week
right.
and send them an email. But I can, like, put the text of the email in there and drop the URL in potentially,
sure.
but, like, Google Sheets doesn't quite support this yet. And
no.
and so it's like, oh, it's so close,
it's close,
right? It's tantalizing. And
it's
like,
close.
I could someday tell Siri, like, hey, send Jason and Aline Sims, like, this week's Clockwise email. And
yeah.
Siri would be like, dope, sure, done.
And,
you know,
and
like, that would be amazing.
If you use some other app to do your organization of the show, so that the current episode record has who were the guests and what were their email addresses, you could do that.
Sure.
But you'd
absolutely.
Have to move to new tools right now.
Yes,
to do
exactly.
That.
It doesn't work with how the way I'm doing things right now. I obviously could spend a lot more time changing over, investing in new tools so I can do this more easily in the future. But hey, that's your classic balance of time investment.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I'm off to Chicago for a couple of days, but we'll put this on the calendar and try to actually record this on a regular time in the future, so that we don't leave you hanging for a couple of weeks like we did this time.
Yeah well, that sounds good
plan.
I think people will be happy.
All right, even though we're selling out and it's like you're not even going to hear the laundry anymore. Oh, people are gonna like this. Dan, hold on a second. I'm gonna unplug my headphones and I'm gonna go turn on the dryer. Hold on.
Bling. It really sounds like a Mario coin thing.
I hope people now know that we're not sellouts after all. Even though we might be a little more organized and we might actually plan when we're going to record this, my clothes
it's
are
fine.
Still drying in the background.
It's fine. Close listeners will have heard my fiance sneeze a couple times in the background early in the show. So, hey.
Verisimilitude. It's all good.
Yeah.
All
like
right.
Here.
Well, thanks to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors, and we'll be back sooner than you might think. My laundry will hopefully dry in 38 minutes, and that's good because I got to pack a bag. And we'll see you next time. Dan, bye-bye.
Bye, Jason.